97.9 FM WCHL and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, student athletes having a voice and a vote on the NC2A Board of Directors. Our guest, Kendall Spencer, chair of the NCAA Division I Student Athlete Advisory Committee. So, Kendall, in this position, your committee has been around for a while, 26 years, and has had a voice, but now you have a vote. How big a difference does that make?
Oh, I think it makes a huge difference. I think for a lot of the student athletes who were, you know, on the outside looking in on our committee and they hadn't really seen our tangible impact, you know, having a vote allows us to really have that. You know, we can sit there and we can have an issue that the board of directors or the membership brings up, and then we can actually survey all the student athletes and get a specific numerical vote for, you know, how student athletes feel about it. And I think that's a huge improvement.
Kendall, you were a track athlete at New Mexico. You're not there anymore, so you can serve as a recent student athlete. How does that work?
So based on our committee, when you graduate, you have a year or two that you can serve on the committee post your athletic eligibility. My case specifically was a little different because, number one, you know, we have a brand new board of directors, which I will be serving on, but also in terms of being a student athlete still, you know, I'm still in graduate school and I'm actually still competing post collegiately in track. So it works out really well for me.
Yeah, so you are able to stay in touch with current student athletes, know what their desires and concerns are, and then voice those to the rest of the board.
Absolutely. That's really the best part about coming from the Mountain West Conference. You know, being based out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, I'm only about 5 hours from the conference headquarters, so, you know, I still attend all the SAC meetings. I still meet regularly with the student athletes within my conference, and we have a very good working relationship with them.
And how does it work across conferences? You're the representative for all student athletes nationwide, right?
Yes. So on the board of directors, I basically serve as the student athlete voice on that specific committee. However, with our student athlete advisory committee, we have 32 representatives from each of the 32 Division I membership conferences, and those are who make up our SAC committee. Now, out of those members, we have a variety of different cabinets and committees that we serve on. My two vice chairs, Dusty Page and Devin Sabata, they serve as representatives to the council in a voting capacity, and we also have a variety of other committees that that our other members represent themselves on. So it's an excellent model.
In the amount of time that you have had a vote, what has come up for a vote? What have you been able to speak into directly?
Well, right now there hasn't really been much need for a vote because, you know, the membership is just getting out of a legislative moratorium. So what we're expecting is this coming fall, you know, coming September and October, we're expecting to see a lot more legislation, really probably a large push, if you will, on some of the legislation that's going to be trying to make its way through the membership. What we did do is myself and my vice chairs and the rest of our committee, we sat down last summer with the knowledge that we might have an opportunity to have a vote, and we put together a structure for how we were going to collect student-athlete feedback. And what we did is that this past December, we sent a test run to all the 32 conferences and their administrators. And so now everyone knows kind of the structure for how we're going to vote, and they know really what's going to be coming down the pipeline this new year.
What sort of feedback have you gotten so far?
It's been amazing, really. You know, one of the initial pushbacks for student athletes not having a vote was, you know, there are a couple administrators who didn't think that student athletes really wanted to take part in that process, or even more so wanted to sacrifice some of their day-to-day time, on the already pretty heavy time demands to be able to go through a lot of that legislation. But what we found is that, you know, we got feedback from I think every single institution in those conferences except for I think maybe two or three in terms of some of the questions that we were asking, you know, just basic stuff about time demands and, you know, pay for play, you know, basic things, really just to once again test it out. You know, we weren't asking specifically about legislation. But what's great is that these student athletes, before we even gave them the instructions on kind of what we were going to be looking for in the future, they took the questions that we were asking them and they completely ran with it. So their insight is already growing, and it's already looking pretty amazing.
So Kendall, you are a student athlete, which takes a lot of time, right? Full-time student until you graduated, and then you took on this role. Are you crazy?
You know, it's funny that that's actually not the first time someone's told me that. You know, I get a lot of comments about, you know, how do you balance, you know, between research and, you know, the stuff I do with NCAA, SAC, and training still. You know, I'm still training post-collegiately. It's a lot of time management, and what makes it even better is I've got an amazing team of student athletes that I work with. And, you know, SAC, you know, it's not just a chair and a vice chair and a couple people on the executive board. You know, it's an entire team of people. And so whenever we need something done or whenever we need help with something, we can send an email or a text message. And, you know, we work together. So what would initially seem like a huge burden is actually very manageable.
Sports Focus will return right after this. Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with Kendall Spencer, who is chair of the NCAA Division I Student Athlete Advisory Committee. Kendall, you're not a collegiate athlete anymore. You're actually training for the Olympics. How does all that work? You're training. You're spending a lot of time on this. We talked a little bit about time management. How do you manage it all?
So in terms of training, it actually works pretty well. You know, I've got an amazing team of coaches that that help give me support, and you know, obviously I do a lot of training, but I think what makes it very very manageable is the fact that, you know, since I represent such a huge body of student athletes, and you know, we have a team of, you know, once again, athletes from all 32 conferences. Whenever I travel, you know, I can send a text message to, you know, someone who's a representative of that institution, and you know, they look out, you know, they make sure that I have everything that I need in terms of training, and I have my coach back home. He sends me the training log, so I can get my work done pretty much anywhere. The only downside is I don't often get the one-on-one coach's eyes on me, but you know, the great thing about technology is, you know, I've got an iPad and I can, you know, they've got apps for that now. So it works out pretty well.
Yeah. So you're in Pittsburgh during this discussion and you train in Santa Fe. So what sort of arrangements did you have to make for this particular trip, let's say?
So for example, for this specific trip, you know, it's getting later in the season now. So there's not a whole lot of volume on my training now. But for this trip, you know, what I do is I ask my coach, you know, kind of what the goals are for the next couple days, knowing that, you know, championships are going to be the end of next month. And, you know, me and him will set up a time to get on Skype and kind of talk through some of the drills that I have to do. And there's a couple of apps that I have on my iPad that he can basically record something with another student athlete on my team back in New Mexico. And he can send it to me on the iPad, and I can look at that. And then when I do it, I can have someone record me and send it to him. And so he can actually take that video record and make edits to it and, you know, give me all kinds of corrections. It's really nice.
All right, so let's get back to the other job, representing student athletes. When you spoke at the NC2A convention, you talked about the student athlete experience and protecting that. What did you mean?
Well, what I meant is oftentimes people overlook the triumph that college athletics allows student athletes to have. It's amazing how many athletes that I meet every day who come from impoverished backgrounds or who come from, you know, broken homes, who initially on paper wouldn't be going to college, you know, wouldn't really have an opportunity at getting an education. But, you know, they meet a coach and the coach says, you know, he has a little bit of talent. And so right there, what tends to happen is the coach sort of mentors him into getting recruited. And the next step, of course, is him stepping onto Division I campus soil, and he has access to an education. Sometimes it's even a free education. And so what happens then is I meet all kinds of other student athletes who, you know, even though they initially started not having the belief that they could make it in the Division I college system, they leave with master's degrees. And I think that is just an amazing experience, and it's a one of a kind contribution to society that no other organization or really no other business model has. And I think that's, you know, that's something worth protecting.
Kendall, when you have a success story to that degree, a kid who was maybe a bit underprepared to come to college for the academic side of it, gets here, gets mentored well, and does well, doesn't it really all come down to the mentoring? It seems like often the recruiting stops right there. We get the kid in, he's now an athlete for us, and we expect him to perform, and that's where it ends.
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, it's to your point, you're absolutely right. You know, I think a lot of it has to do with the mentoring and the resources that student-athlete has on that campus. But a lot of it, you know, student-athletes, believe it or not, as they're matriculating through their undergraduate career, sometimes a lot of them have a turning point where they realize that, you know, since I was able to make it in this environment when I didn't think that I would initially be able to do it, I can be so much more than just a student athlete. You know, I can go be a doctor. I can go be a professor. I can be a lawyer. So I think obviously a lot of that has to do with the mentoring, but I think student athletes oftentimes on their own will sit down and realize that their potential is really, you know, limitless. And I think that's what allows for a lot of that ambition that our student athletes tend to show in their studies.
Kendall, I'm all for giving people a chance. But there have been cases, documented cases, when the student athlete was so woefully underprepared that the institution actually did that kid a disservice by not giving him or her everything that was needed because so much was needed. What about those situations?
Well, I think when you look at those specific situations, you have to take into context the high school that the kid's coming from, the background that they're coming from, and their mindset that they're coming into to a specific college. You know, not believe it or not every student athlete is going to have that intrinsic value system on getting an education. But at the same time, you know, we could say that about any organization, about any business, about any team. You know, there's going to be student athletes on certain teams that, you know, walk in and don't work as hard. There's going to be athletes on teams that, you know, flunk out and, you know, who just don't really show the initiative and they just don't really care. But I don't think that that's something that, you know, because that happens, we all of a sudden make sacrifices that will affect the other 95% of student athletes that do really value their education, that do really put in the work. I think because of the unique nature of this model, I think the pros definitely outweigh the cons. In that context.
Sports Focus, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion with Kendall Spencer, who is the chair of the NCAA Division I Student Athlete Advisory Committee and as such has a vote on the board of directors for the NC2A. Kendall, what I've heard a lot doing this show is people who are advocates of student athletes is that student-athletes don't get a piece of the pie. However you define that, typically it comes down to money, but it also comes down to one-year scholarships that might not be renewed, a student gets hurt and is jettisoned, forgotten about. What is the appropriate piece of the pie for student athletes?
Well, here's the thing. Here's my personal opinion on it, and I've talked to other student athletes about it as well. You know, a quote-unquote piece of the pie for some athletes, you know, in their mind, isn't really that necessary. You know, when you look at the overall value of that student-athlete experience and the value of, you know, for example, walking onto a team and leaving with a degree, you know, getting on scholarship, you have access to study hall and, you know, on-campus living and life skill training and training tables. When you look at the value of it, that's a huge piece of the pie. You know, I didn't come to the University of New Mexico as a full scholarship athlete. So I had to pay part of my tuition for those first 2 years until I won a national title, and then, you know, of course they bumped it up. But that whole time, you know, I was in classes with other regular students who, you know, would talk about how much debt they knew they were going to be in, and how thousands and thousands of regular students can't even get into the classes that they need to graduate because they're full. As a student athlete, not only do I get my education paid for, but I get first dibs on a lot of classes. So it's never an issue of really whether or not I'm going to graduate on time or really having those resources. So I think when I look at that, for me personally, you know, a piece of the pie, you know, I could honestly care less. You know, the question is, would people be saying that if coaches weren't making millions of dollars?
They are making
millions of dollars. But, you know, once again, I think when you look at the institution and, you know, themselves, not every coach is making that kind of money, and also not every student athlete is necessarily jumping at the bit to get a piece of the revenue. And a result of student athletes getting a piece of that revenue could also result in certain sport programs being cut.
Sure. Well, it does seem to come down to certain institutions, let's say the Power Five conferences, and certain sports, football, men's basketball. They generate most of the money. And, you know, there are example after example after example of the one-and-done mindset of, I'm going to college because I have to, just long enough to get to the NBA. Does that mindset sort of spoil it for everybody else?
Yes and no. I mean, yes, in the sense that sometimes those student athletes, you know, leave their university and they leave their team behind. But I think a better question is, you know, should student athletes be able to make that decision for themselves? You know, should they be given the flexibility to come and go as they please, just as coaches can? You know, because as I'm sure you're aware, coaches can up and leave whenever. You know, I've the first 3 years of my collegiate career, I had a different coach. And a lot of times I didn't know he was leaving until he was already gone. And so if it's something that a student-athlete needs to transfer or needs to leave or, you know, sees a better opportunity elsewhere, I'm you know, who am I to say whether or not they should be able to do that? I think that for every one student athlete that, you know, says he's a one and done or she's a one and done and wants to go to the professional league, I think for every one of those students, we've got 50 to 100 other student athletes who are sticking it out and who are really taking advantage of the resources.
All right. So now let me see if I'm getting this right. Are you saying a kid ought to be able to transfer from Arkansas State to Alabama?
That is not what I'm saying. You know, I'm saying that's definitely going to be an ongoing conversation. But I think, you know, there's pros and cons to both sides. Student athletes necessarily, some of them have valid reasons for leaving, some of them don't. But I don't think either one of us are in any position to be able to say, you know, whether or not, you know, that's a good reason for leaving. You know, ultimately. The student athlete is there to get an education, and you know there are hundreds of thousands of student athletes who value that. And I don't necessarily believe that we should take that opportunity away from those hundreds of thousands of student athletes just because we have a handful of other athletes who, you know, decide to transfer, decide to, you know, be a one and done and go to the pros.
All right. So in the final 30 seconds that we have, let's take you back to middle school. and then to kind of fast forward from there to here. Can you imagine where you are today compared to what your mindset was then?
Absolutely not. You know, I knew I was going to be in college, but I had no idea I would be where I was now. My parents instilled in me values of education at a very young age. But, I struggled a little bit in middle school and in high school as well. And it wasn't until, I realized that I was, athletically talented that I had the capacity to really, for example, go to a Division I school. And just being in that atmosphere at the University of New Mexico completely changed my outlook on life. I had no initial aspirations of getting a PhD in neuroscience or getting a graduate degree joining multiple honor societies, but that atmosphere challenged me, and having those resources of different sports staff and coaches really gave me the foundation that I needed to be ambitious.
And it's good to hear those success stories. That does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Kendall Spencer. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk, and as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers!
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance, and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.